This is Rochreel 2. So you said that you got posted to Southend. What were you supposed to do there?
Cipher. Cipher officer. I think probably before you went on the course, you were told, you know, you'll be signals and cipher, and you'll do administrative or something like that. And I was told, well, you're going up as a cipher officer, So I said, well, that's fine, suits me, I don't mind. And so there I was, sent off to Southend. And that is where all the merchant ships for the East Coast convoys gathered. They gathered off the end of Southend Pier. And so it was entirely convoys. There were escort vessels used to come there, but we didn't have any sort of dealings with them very much, just as we didn't have any dealings with the merchant ships. They were all mostly colliers and presumably grain ships that had come over from America or something, and which would gather at Southend in order to go up the East Coast. It was you didn't know what was going on anywhere else. Occasionally you would see signals which gave you a bit of idea of what was going on, because of course another thing that they had there were MTBs, and you would get signals in about the battles between the E-boats and the MTBs. And you know, of course we'd hear get the signals about attacks on the convoys and that sort of thing. But it was a very restricted view of the war.
But were you able to learn very much about the success or fate of those East Coast convoys in 41, 42 whilst you were at Southend?
Oh yes, you heard what happened, that convoy such and such thing had arrived safely up in whatever it would be, Hull or up that way.
Probably ending up at Methil, a lot of them.
Where?
In Scotland, in Methil.
No, it was... Now, which was the... Because we used to use the teleprint a lot, and we used to be talking to, at least writing to people up in... Gone. I can't remember. I can't remember the names of the Scottish
ports.
Because as far as I remember, we never spoke to Edinburgh or anywhere. But what would be the Edinburgh port?
Granton, was it?
Hmm?
Granton or Leith?
Leith, I think that rings a bell. No, it's awful, you see, my memory. After all, it's over 50 years ago.
It was. But you could understand, you could understand the contents of the messages.
Well, the teleprinter was always plain language. It was only when you were dealing with the ships that you had to cipher them up.
And who was in charge there of your work at Southend?
Jolly good question. I can't remember any of the names. The only name I remember, our office was one of the bed and breakfast houses on Southend, the front, you know. And we were in the dining room. What had been the dining room, and the operation staff was in the whatever room was next door to it. I suppose it had been, I don't know what it was, sitting room, and it had a hatch between the two, which was putting the plates and things through. And every so often, a head would come through the hatch, which filled the entire hatch. Commander Fox, and he had the hair, as far as I remember, the color of fox, a fox, and this magnificent head used to come through, tell us what he wanted us to do, or what we hadn't done, or whatever it was. He had a goatee beard. No, he didn't. He didn't have a beard. He had huge, great goat whiskers. And if ever he reads this, he'll probably be surprised that we used to go into absolute hysterics with this face through the hatch.
With gingery hair.
He was not a young man then, so I don't suppose he's. I don't suppose.
Did the Germans raid Southend?
No. I don't even remember any bombs there. I don't think they did. They weren't interested in Southend. I'm not surprised. No, I mustn't say that because it's a jolly good place, Southend.
Can you tell me how you came to go to HMS Medway?
Well, it was from Southend. I suddenly said, well, there must be something more to life than this. And I dashed up to London to the headquarters in order to offer my small self to for overseas work, and they'd the most extraordinary thing. She was an incredible woman, the director of the Wrens. Because it was in the middle of the winter, and I was dressed up in inevitably officers, Wren officers' clothes, which was a hat which you wore straight down over your nose. And a great coat, and I was marching along a corridor which was blacked out because there were no windows anyway. They'd all been blown out, and a door in the corridor burst open, and a great figure came dashing out and clasped me because we met head on. At least she was about 5 inches taller at least than me.
You crashed into her.
Crashed into her. And she took me by the shoulders and she pushed me away and she said, "Good heavens! Cunningham from Southend." And I stood there and looked at her, and that was a year ago she had met me twice. She could do it to anybody. She was absolutely incredible. She ended up after the war in the on the coal board.
What was her name?
Lawton Matthews.
The same lady you were talking about earlier.
Yeah. She was director of the Wrens all through the war.
So you'd gone right to the top to get permission to go abroad?
Oh, no. It was only by chance she came dashing out of her office and clasped me in her arms, which, because we met head, absolutely head on. And she said, "Can't wait, sorry." Sort of shoved me aside, dashed on up the corridor. But I was absolutely staggered that after a year she would remember, because she went to every single one of the courses in those days for, you know, at Greenwich. Quite incredible.
Was it difficult to get permission to go abroad for a Wren in 1942?
No. It was just about the time when, I don't suppose you, it would have impinged on your, but there was a contingent of Wrens went out just about that time to Gibraltar and were torpedoed, and I think every single one was lost. They didn't survive, I don't think. And I don't know whether a signal had come round from Wren headquarters saying, you know, people are needed for overseas. I can't remember that. But I know I went up to ask the whoever's in charge of the overseas side of the...
So it was just a formality?
I don't know. I put my request in for overseas, work overseas, and I got my orders, I don't know how long afterwards.
So it looks like sometime in 42 you went out to the Middle East.
That's right, yeah.
Was that again round Cape Town?
Mm, yes, you couldn't go through the Med at that time.
Did you run into the enemy that second voyage?
No, it was a very, very big convoy, which half was going off to India and half was going up to Egypt. And we didn't, all we met was very bad storms in the Bay of Biscay. And what we thought, we were all sort of lying about on the deck when we got out of the storms and were in sunnier climes, and we saw this light in the sky, middle of the day, light in the sky. And we said, my God, it's an aeroplane. And we said, well, it's keeping its station over us very, very well. And it went on following it. Until one of the naval officers as well, who was on board, came up and said, what are you looking at? We said, look, an aeroplane, sir. He went into shrieks of laughter, and he said, that's Venus. And that's as near as we came to the, we can hardly call it the enemy.
Do you remember the name of the ship that you were on? The ship that you went out in?
It was an old Cunard liner. I don't think I can remember the name.
So you went to... did you stop in South Africa on the way?
Yes, yes.
Did you get any kind of reception there?
Oh, yes. They were absolutely marvellous, the South Africans down in Cape Town. They had put themselves out to entertain the people who were going around the coast, because everybody who went round, you know, to Egypt or India stopped at Cape Town. We stopped at Durban. Did we stop at Durban? No, I don't remember whether we stopped at Durban. Certainly the Cape. We also stopped. Now that was an interesting stop up in Lagos. No, Tekoradi. Takoradi.
Why was that so interesting?
Well, it was interesting in that, I don't know whether one should say this, but it made a very, very great impression on me, because they'd, as we had, I can't remember how many troops we had, about the troops below decks were crammed cheek by jowl. There were a lot of troops going out. And And so they put on board a whole lot of extra, you know, the usual things, floats and things like that, including a whole lot of extra boats, lifeboats. And when we got to Takoradi, we weren't allowed off. But they decided to let down the boats into the sea because, of course, they dry out. When and the proper ships' lifeboats were all right. They floated, the others all sank. So they pulled them up pretty quick, sharp. And so we said, well, that's it. We've had our chips if we're torpedoed.
The proper ships' lifeboats as opposed to what?
To the things that were put on board as extras. They were sort of piled up in heaps above the proper ships' boats. It made a great impression on me because I thought, well...
They were put on board in Nigeria?
No, in Britain.
But they all sank.
They all sank in Takoradi. But well, they'd left them on the falls, so that they pull them up. When they saw everybody looking over the side, they pulled them up pretty quickly, sharply, because it didn't seem to do any harm to the morale on board.
Did you?
Everybody knew that only X number of people could get into the proper ship's boats.
Did you personally get any entertainment from the South Africans in Cape Town? Did they take you to their home or something?
No, but I think that the other ranks were given a lot of hospitality from the South Africans, because of course it's a fairly strong British contingent down there.
But not the officers on the ship.
I think they were considered that they could amuse themselves, but the troops didn't have much money to throw about, so. I think they did a lot for them, entertain them a lot.
So you arrived eventually at the canal zone?
Yes. That's another thing that's stuck in my memory too. I don't remember much of the trip up from Cape Town, but when we got into the Red Sea, everybody said, isn't this marvellous? Because there wasn't really a blackout or anything up the Red Sea, because they hadn't had any raids or anything in there. And something went wrong up the bridge, and it was before America came into the war, and we rammed and sank an American, perhaps I shouldn't tell this story. Rammed and sank a, I'll go on, I started.
A warship?
No, an American merchant ship. And it turned out that the officer of the watch was playing poker in the night cabin. And there was only the helmsman on the bridge.
Of the American ship?
No.
Of yours?
Mm. Perhaps I shouldn't say it. Perhaps you should work that out.
Well, it would have all been in a court of inquiry anyway, so. But was this at night time?
No. Oh, Half a jiff. Yes, it was. It was night time.
So you didn't see anything of it?
No. Well, we heard the bang, and we all sort of dashed up and to see. And the poor old American ship sank. We had to take the crew back to Suez. Port Suez.
So none of the crew were lost?
No, I think one or two were damaged a bit. They were a very irritated crew, as you can well imagine.
Were they swearing and being abusive?
No, I don't know where they put them, but we didn't see them again. I just think they probably wanted to clobber us all. I don't know. And then when we were nearing Port Suez and we got all our baggage out, it was a ship which had a jinx on it, I think. Because when we were nearing Suez and we'd got all our baggage and put it on deck, someone must have chucked a lighted cigarette or something into the middle of it, and we had a final fire. And there were the crew chucking people's baggage over the side, you know. And we were all hanging over the side watching the baggage sailing down the side of the ship. People say, "Oh, look, there's old so-and-so's hold all." And, "Oh, Lord, oh, God, there's mine."
Did you lose your personal possessions?
No, they were the other side of the ship. We were all quite happy to stand on the rail and shriek with laughter and see everybody else's baggage. Little things please little minds.
So did you go straight off to HMS Medway?
I don't remember anything of the journey between Suez and Alexandria, because that's where Medway was, in Alexandria Harbour. And I think it had I have an idea. I was trying to remember, because Maidstone was in Gibraltar, and I think that Medway started the war in Malta, but I wouldn't be sure.
Can you say, for those who don't know, what HMS Medway was?
HMS Medway was a submarine depot ship. And it was equipped to maintain submarines, to arm torpedoes, you name it. It was a big ship, and it was built as a submarine depot ship, I think. It wasn't a merchant ship ever.
What did it look like?
It looked like a merchant ship.
Was it, you say it was a big ship, was it, say, the size of a cruiser?
Well, it's difficult to it was more like a big liner. I can't remember how many tons she was. But I would say at least 8,000. I don't know. Perhaps more.
So the size of the crew, was it hundreds?
Well, it had all the technicians on board to maintain a submarine flotilla. And, of course, when we left Alexandria, we had two submarine flotillas on board, because the people in Malta, S10, they'd had just about enough, because they, I don't know whether you will know this, probably not if you're not really interested in submarines, but the submarines in Malta used to have to spend the whole day on the harbour floor, submerged. And it had become too much for everybody to cope with, going out on patrol, as well as, and then coming back and having to sit submerged the whole of the day. They used to come up at night and do all their fueling and all that sort of thing at night. And so they had a holiday and came over to Medway. And there were two Captain S's, Captain S 10 and our Captain S. Yes. What were we? One. Captain S 1, Rakeen, his name was. S 10 was Shrimp Simpson. And they all came over with all their technicians and everything. And so Medway was absolutely jam-packed with people, because they had to bring their technicians as well.
So it was just to give them a break from the strain of being in the siege of Malta.
Mm. And yes.
And so they arrived when you were in Alex?
They came over when we were still in Alex, yes. Because but they all came with us when we sailed.
How long were you in Alex before you set sail for Beirut?
Oh, that I can't remember. It must have been about, what, 4 months, something like that. Because we moved when the Germans arrived around, you know, they came around the, and Tobruk and...
When Alex was under threat,
yes,
from the German advance.
Yes. They decided to move the Wrens out to Port Said and Suez. And Captain Rakeen stumped off to the Wren officer in charge and said, "I'm taking my Wrens with me." And she said, "Oh, I'm delighted." 3 less Wrens to move. They all moved in baggage trucks and things like that, the trains.
How many Wrens were on Medway then?
3.